Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Holistic Health Podcast. How fun, gut health friends. How exciting. We are here to burst your brains, but don't know that that's the right saying. It is now. I'm going to burst your brains, everybody, in the best way possible so that if you do have digestive issues, hopefully by the end of this episode, you at least know what not to do and have some hints around what might be a better approach. So, Amy, do you want to dive right on in with this conversation?
Yes, I would love to. And the reason we're having this conversation is because, you know, I think the whole world now appreciates that gut health is the foundation for the well-being of every single other organ and system and gland in our body. And I love that. I love that people are finally appreciating the systemic nature of the immune system and the body and are attempting to improve their gut health. However, because so many people have now learned why it's so important, what Nat and I have noticed, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've probably either made some of these mistakes or you know someone who's currently trying to sort their tummy out and is maybe doing some of these things. We thought it was really important to talk about really the 101 of what not to do, because you can make things a lot worse. However bad they might be, you can definitely make it worse by putting, you know, a foot wrong. So we wanted to save you from the trouble. And I think the first thing we will open with here is attempting to apply a strategy without actually knowing why you're applying it or what you're applying it to. Now, in short, in the medical world, prescription without diagnosis is illegal. And what I mean by that is, yes, there's sort of a fundamental legislative issue there. But beyond that, you know, you wouldn't prescribe a medication if you weren't sure what kind of disease or condition someone had. And so the first step is always to identify in the best way that you can what is going on. Now, you know, we like to say test, don't guess, but there are lots of ways you can discern what someone's root cause or root causes might be, and if there is indeed a diagnosis to arrive at, which would then guide treatment. And in the case of the gut, there's so much that can go on, and often there's multiple things happening at the same time. You might have leaky gut, you might have lost some of your mucosal biofilm, you might have knocked out some of your natural microflora, assuming they were in good shape to begin with, and for many people they're not. And then the dominoes can fall further than that, and you can have dysbiosis, so overgrowth of bacteria, yeast, fungi. There's even a viriome or the viral microbiome. There's a whole ecosystem in there, friends, that just kind of do their own thing without us really thinking about it until something goes wrong. And from there, you can have, you know, actual conditions where we see overgrowth of certain pathogens. You know, Helicobacter pylori is one that people would probably be really familiar with. C. diff is one that we would see associated with antibiotic use, and in particular, people in hospital. There are many different classifications of dysbiosis. And then you've got particular types of dysbiosis like SIBO. And if you've listened to any of our other podcast episodes on gut health, we have talked about SIBO on and off. And it is a particular type of dysbiosis where there's overgrowth of two classes of bacteria that are very ancient. And so the way that you would treat SIBO would be different to how you would treat a different form of dysbiosis. Now, you know, from one extreme to the other, you can certainly spend thousands of dollars on tests learning every little nuanced thing about your gastrointestinal microbiome, which may not even necessarily be that helpful as far as moving forward goes. But what I do know is that I've seen people waste a lot of money on treatments that haven't done what they were hoping they would do, or maybe has caused more problems inadvertently because they didn't know what they were trying to treat in the first place. And therefore, it's kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and just hoping something sticks and hoping that you'll get a result. It's tedious, it's drawn out, it makes the process way longer than it needs to be. It's a waste of money as well as time. But on top of that, potentially you could allow something quite harmful to remain there, or you could even worsen it. So step number one is to really understand, using a combination of methodologies, to actually really get a handle on what's going on. So that would be my first recommendation.
Yeah, now, I just really love that. And also to remind people, like, or just highlight, underline what you said there around, when we say understand what's really going on and kind of test, don't guess, as you said, like, not always does that have to mean comprehensive gut microbiome mapping. It certainly can, but I think that sometimes when you're working with a really skilled, experienced practitioner, there's actually a lot of quote unquote testing or information that can be ascertained just in hearing your health history and your story and your symptoms. So I just like to mention that for those people who feel like gut testing is outside of their budget or access, or for those people who chronically test everything, and perhaps, you know, that's actually not the way forward. But anyway, I digress. The second point that we wanted to make here is making sure that you're not just trying what worked for someone else. And this is, we both have multiple examples of where this has gone wrong for people. And I think this is really important for a number of reasons. First and foremost, everyone is different in terms of A, how their gut microbiome is made up. There are lots of different variations, as Amy already said, on quote unquote gut issues. So it's not just one and of the same, as in you have IBS, therefore everyone gets the same treatment, or you have a parasite and everyone gets the same treatment. It actually doesn't work like that. And when we're like an example of that we've both experienced with clients or friends is when, you know, someone is experiencing digestive issues, and we were having a bit of a loving giggle about this before we hit record, that ironically, a lot of the quote unquote gut healing foods, so think, you know, kombuchas, sauerkraut, kefir, bone broth, can for a lot of people actually worsen their symptoms and worsen the problem. And that's why it's really important to actually understand what's going on, because I see people almost double down when it's not going well, as in I've seen people who are like, well, I've got gut issues, so I'm just going to go absolutely balls to the walls with all of this fermenting. And then it's not working and they're getting worse. So their reaction sometimes is, well, I just need to do it better and more. I'm obviously just not having enough. And you will dig yourself a very deep hole. In saying that, there are, of course, situations, individualized situations, where those foods will absolutely help you and that might be the right thing for you. The other thing that I think of when I think about why it's not a good idea to just do what worked for someone else is because everyone has a different constitution. Everyone has a different capacity to detoxify things that are coming up and need to be processed. And I think of this from a constitution perspective. There are some people who are quite sensitive and you have to go really slow with them when you're working on any issue, but particularly when we're trying to work on gut issues, which often ask for other, you know, parts of detoxification to become involved. And if you use a very strong, heavy hitting approach with an individual that has more of a sensitive constitution, and sensitive not meaning weak, but just sensitive to changes more so than another one. Like, we often joke about, you know, people, well, I joke, I shouldn't speak for you. I think about the people who you've just got to like really high dose them. And then there's people who are real sensitive Sallys where you could just give them like drop dosing of things or really low amounts of nutrients and they'll have the same response as someone on high dose. And that's where I think it's really important to make sure that the approach is being tailored to you, because it's contrary to popular belief, the goal doing a gut or digestive protocol is not actually to make you have a reaction. It's to try and, for me at least, and every practitioner does this differently, is it's to try and push your, like, to get the result without tipping you over the edge of going into what we call like a bit of a healing crisis or a flare up in symptoms.
Mm.
So let's move on to the next point while we're just on the, while we're just beating everyone down with these things. Sorry, friends.
You know what? It's such a good point about the detox though, because 25% of all of our bodily detoxification is actually done in the lining of the gut. And this is why there's this ironic counterproductive thing that happens with fermented foods and someone with poor gut health. The worse it is, the less you're able to metabolize histamine. And I was thinking of a friend when you were talking about fermented foods who jumped on that bandwagon and just fermented the shit out of absolutely everything she ate. And like not even a month later, she was just on the floor in extreme pain and just had really done her gut a huge disservice by accident. Fortunately, she didn't convince herself she just needed to do more and better and harder and it was her fault. It wasn't working. But certainly things that are purported to be good for gut health, and they certainly are in certain contexts, are not always universally the case for people for the aforementioned reasons and others. And for the same reason, I would also say one of the things that you and I would see a lot is people just cutting foods randomly out from their diet. Mm-hmm. And whilst there is certainly, I would say, a handful of things that we know to be consistently problematic for people, at least in the interim. So for example, you know, the proteins with proline, so casein and gluten, for example, we don't produce the enzymes to cleave those amino acids off. Therefore, they aren't digestible by our gut, which means in the event your gut's not in good shape or you have a genetic susceptibility or whatever, they are commonly problematic. And then you've got other foods that might be problematic to someone who's got an inflamed gut, but won't be after they've actually done some healing. And so, you know, where I'm going with this is I've had a couple of clients, you know, in my time and practice who have just cut out more and more and more and more and more and more and more until their diet, the variety of what they're eating has shrunk down. And there's an issue with this for a couple of reasons. Outside of the handful of foods that we find to be consistently problematic, most other food intolerances, not always, but often, are actually a result of gastrointestinal inflammation, leaky gut, upregulated immune responses, and not actually that there's an inherent immune issue with that food. And so my very early years as a clinician, when I was doing more testing than I do now, because obviously we can see a lot without having to run tests, but you would see if I'd ran a food intolerance test before I did a gut repair and then another one after, the list of foods that people are intolerant to dramatically shrinks. And so that's an issue in and of itself from just a holistic health perspective. But second of all, it leaves people in a trap where they are continually having gut symptoms or gut issues of some description and they're not addressing the root cause. And so they are actually developing more and more food intolerances as a result. And it gets harder and harder to maintain good health or even get the nutrients you need for gut health when your diet starts to shrink like that. So again, this is an area I would really recommend you get professional guidance on, so that when you undertake a gastrointestinal rehabilitation program, whatever that looks like and whoever that's with, that you don't end up, you know, just to give a really personal example, a family member of mine who, you know, had really bad gut health because of a gut pathogen that, you know, was left in there for over a decade before it was identified, ended up being intolerant to everything except white rice and iceberg lettuce. And, you know, it meant that loads of other otherwise benign foods were triggering really significant inflammatory reactions in their body. And it was because the underlying issue wasn't addressed. So yes, it can be helpful to cut out some foods for a short period of time, a bit like a candida diet, by the way. Like, you know, candida in general can be fixed in under 6 weeks. So anyone who's on a candida diet for months and months or years on years on end hasn't fixed the underlying issue. And certainly cutting out foods from your diet is not treating the root cause either.
Yes, agreed. And I think the other thing that happens a lot is, and understandably, like, we don't say this with any like judgment, we get what it's like to feel just desperate and wanting a fix. And it's very easy to be roped into taking certain supplements or trying things that have big promises, especially when there's evidence in front of you, whether that's like personally or just from a marketing perspective, that someone else has gotten results. So totally understand that. But the other mistake that I think a lot of people make is just taking really random probiotics. And I think there's a number of reasons why this is a problem. I think different probiotic strains have been researched in relation to different either symptoms or illnesses or disease states. And therefore, it's not actually worth your money to just take probiotics, generally speaking, willy-nilly without understanding whether or not you're taking the right strain for the specific purpose that you're trying to achieve. The other thing is also to know that probiotics work when you're taking them. And the goal of a probiotic is not to just re-inoculate your gut and you know, you've just taken a probiotic and all is well. Because when you stop taking probiotics, they, unless you feed the seeds that you've planted, then those species and other species won't actually grow. So probiotics are very effective when the right species or strain is selected for the right purpose, but it's not actually the most helpful strategy to build a diverse and robust microbiome, in my experience. I think that is far more dependent on like intestinal integrity in terms of just even the surveillance of the gut lining and the interaction between your gut and your immune system and how well that's functioning. And Amy will talk about that in a moment. But also it's very dependent on what you are feeding the microbes that are there, because if you don't feed them, no matter how many probiotics you're putting in, the populations just won't grow. And the other reality that I think perhaps we're not all generally aware of is that they're like, we can only encapsulate in terms of, we can only take internally just the tiniest drop in the ocean's worth of probiotics or microbes compared to what actually exists in our gut. Because, and that might change in the future in terms of more and more things will be able to be encapsulated. But generally speaking, like when we're looking at how many beneficial bacteria or just commensal bacteria, so commensal being neither good or bad, just in existence, and they only become a problem when they're overgrown. But there's so many, but we can only encapsulate a very small handful. So if you're only using probiotics as a means to quote unquote fix your gut or support your gut, you're probably doing yourself a massive disservice and potentially also wasting your money.
That's such a good segue into my next point. And it reminded me of, I was speaking at a pharmacy conference years ago, and it was quite funny, really. There was a gastroenterologist.
Did you poo yourself?
What's that?
Did you poo yourself? Is this not a poo story?
I kind of wish I had, because how appropriate would it be for this episode? But sorry to disappoint you and all of our listeners. There's no fecal matter explosions to be had in this story.
Don't worry, guys. There'll be another one soon, I have no doubt. Yeah,
promise.
Just hang in.
It's only a matter of time. So this was a pharmacy conference. I don't even know how many years ago it was, but a gastroenterologist was the speaker right before me. And as someone who's obviously really passionate about gut health, I got there early to hear his presentation, and basically he shat on, actually there was some fecal activity, he shat on probiotics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he stood up there and said a lot of different things. And it was quite funny because my presentation was literally about how to apply probiotics effectively. And I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't have blamed everyone in the room if they'd stood up and walked out, because he basically said my talk would have been a waste of time. And what was disappointing, though, was I actually caught him on the way out and I said, hey, what you said is true. And that is, half of the research on probiotics show them to be ineffective, don't do anything. And there's 1,000 reasons for that, including limitations with study design that don't allow you to treat the person as opposed to the disease. But anyway, I digress. I said to him, actually, there's actually one really big reason why probiotics often fail. And I said, I'd love you to stick around so I can teach you about it, because I'm like, this could revolutionize his practice. But as is often the case, he was not interested in receiving any information that I had. But what he would have learnt if he had stuck around, and for all of the pharmacists and other clinicians that stayed to hear what I had to say, I really commend you for your commitment to learning and actually learning from lots of different sources, in spite of perhaps some of the messaging around that, was one of the key fundamentals when it comes to gut health that gets overlooked is the glycocalyx. And I'm trying not to get too nerdy here, but it's just,
I'm going to give you a look if you do.
Thank you. I'm just going to do my very best.
What is a glycocalyx?
Glycocalyx. All right. There's a number of names for this, including the mucosal biofilm. And I feel a bit sheepish using the term biofilm, because that term is usually used in a negative context when we look at pathogenic bacteria. But actually, if you think about our gut wall, it's one cell thick. And of course, part of healing the gut is making sure the integrity of those enterocytes or intestinal tract cells is good, that the tight gap junctions are intact. But on top of that, when we have healthy enterocytes, we also see a secretion of this mucus layer that acts like a physical and chemical barrier to stop us, first of all, becoming intolerant to every goddamn food that we eat. Mm-hmm. But second of all, it acts like, you know, when you put a gel on someone's tummy to do an ultrasound, not that I do that myself, by the way,
every day, thanks.
Every other day, every day that ends
everyone
in Y. Sonographers.
No, I feel like most people know what we're talking. We've all watched Hollywood movies.
We've all seen movies. Yeah. So it transmits the sound frequencies more effectively. Our gut and the immune cells, or the dendritic cells on the other side of the wall, kind of keeping watch, require that gel there to be able to receive messages through what are basically biological barcode scanners. So we've all done self-checkout at Woolies. We're scanning the barcode of everything we're buying. Basically, our gut, when it's well, is scanning the barcode of every bacteria, yeast, and virus coming through and telling the immune system how to respond. And when you lose that mucosal biofilm, we start to see distorted messaging and inflammation occurring in the gut and things like that. But the last thing I'll say about that, I mean, I could talk about this for days, but I'm worried Nat's going to release the look, so I'm going to wrap this up. No one wants the look. But the biofilm itself also provides the home for your commensal microflora, or the bacteria that are meant to be there, your microbiome in its full and glorious, you know, orchestra, symphony orchestra style that it is. And so with what happens with inflammation and gut damage or a course of antibiotics is we lose that biofilm, and then you could take the best probiotic in the world and it's got nowhere to stick. So supporting that and those other layers of the gut are a crucial part of the synergistic and holistic approach to fixing someone's insides. And it isn't something that you can do by reading articles online or trying to pour through, you know, scientific literature yourself. So that's definitely a big bugbear for me, is those basic foundations for gut health. Most people aren't even aware that they're a requirement, let alone know what to do about that. And maybe one day that'll be different. I look forward to the day where people have a lot more education around supporting their physiological health. But currently, that's a really big one that gets missed. And it gets missed by people who are meant to be experts in gut health, like gastroenterologists. And so, yeah, it's such a vicious circle, isn't it, where people end up circling back and having to sort of try and figure it out themselves, when seeing someone who's meant to be an expert in that area doesn't necessarily have that information either.
Yes. And to highlight for people, there are tools in order to be able to provide, I guess, the necessary ingredients for that layer in the gut that Amy's talking about to actually develop. And that's why often when we're taking an individual through a gut healing journey or protocol, individualized protocol, there are certain stages in which we would introduce certain things so that what comes after it is effective. And that's why it is much better to have individualized support around that side of things. And the other thing I just wanted to connect or reiterate for people who kind of like to hear things in a few different ways is, I know that a lot of our listeners have heard of leaky gut, and we've already mentioned it here before, but a very simple way of saying that is that leaky gut happens when there's a break in all of that beautiful layer that Amy was talking about, when that breaks, and that can break for multiple different reasons. And when it does, that's when that conversation between the gut and the immune system that Amy was talking about becomes compromised, and no longer is the body able to function optimally in the way that it otherwise would. And that's why what we're saying is healing that layer and that conversation is a way to make everything you do after that more effective. And interestingly, this goes so nicely. Gosh, it's like we planned this. This goes so nicely into the next point, which is a mistake that a lot of people make either intentionally or unintentionally, is ignoring the role of your nervous system when it comes to digestion and also digestive healing. So one very relevant example to that is that one of the fastest ways to create intestinal permeability or leaky gut is stress. And of course, stress is an inevitable part of being a human. And so it's not to say that you need to be stressed every time you're stressed about being stressed, because that will get you nowhere. But being in a chronically stressed state and remembering that stress is perceived stress. So it is not, you know, it's relative to your own experience, not to someone else's. So it's really important that we actually have a key focus of digestive work and digestive healing on nervous system support and nervous system healing. The other ways that this comes into play is also that we need to have adequate time in a parasympathetic nervous system state, so a rest and digest state, in order for lots of different elements of our digestive system to work. So an example of that is that our vagus nerve, which is one of the nerves or the nerve that goes from the brain and innervates into the gut, its activity influences what's called the migrating motor complex, which is like this little sweep that's done to help food and anything that shouldn't be, higher up in the digestive tract to move along. And that's a key way of not only helping with motility, so movement of food through your digestive tract, but also preventing overgrowths from happening. And the other way that, or another really relevant example for this as well, is that you need to, like, if you are in too much of a stress state, you're not going to be able to make enough stomach acid, which helps you to digest your proteins. It helps to activate the absorption of certain nutrients. It also is a key line of defense against parasites and bad bacteria. And you also will have compromised ability to produce your own digestive enzymes as well, which again is going to manifest in bloating, gas, undigested food in the stool, nutrient deficiencies over time. And I have to say that I think this is a huge problem, this whole stress piece when it comes to people that are experiencing digestive issues. Mm-hmm. And it's also a reason why some people find that their digestive issues just seem to keep coming back or recurring. So I think if you're someone who's listening who knows that one of your biggest Achilles heels or one of your biggest challenges is that you are constantly stressed or your nervous system really needs some love and you're experiencing digestive issues, I would encourage you, rather than ignoring the fact that you are stressed, really see that as a key element in how you can actually heal your digestive system. And I have to say, I've had some clients where I've had to say to them, this is not coming from a digestive issue place. Like, I can see that it's manifesting in digestive symptoms, but this issue is coming from, a nervous system or emotional body place. And so you're going to be your time, your money, your energy, your effort is going to be much better spent in this season of your life or in this moment in time in actually developing tools in order to manage that better, because you'll find that if you do that, there's a lot less that's required to quote unquote fix your gut. And one last example I'll give for people in order to hopefully feel like they can, relate more strongly to what I'm saying here, is that so many people find that when they're on holidays, if they have gut issues, that's all of a sudden they can tolerate foods they wouldn't usually, or they're less bloated, or they're less gassy, or their bowel motions are more consistent. And that's an example of how much of an influence stress and your nervous system can have on digestive issues. And I have a current client that I can think of, and I hope she's listening. If she is, she'll know who she is, where every year she goes overseas, and every year when she goes overseas, her constipation disappears. And she digests better, and she's not bloated or gassy. And it's not a coincidence.
No, absolutely not. We can only digest our food properly when we're in a parasympathetic nervous system state, when you have activated the fight or flight system, which people do every day with coffee, just about, all other human stressors aside. And it actually robs the gut of circulation by up to 75%, which drops the stomach acid and bile flow. And of course, the migrating motor complex, as Nat said, doesn't get activated. So the cleaners don't come in and clean house. So as you can see, everyone, dealing with gut challenges or addressing your gut health is not just a matter of, oh, it's a food intolerance and I just need to take a probiotic or, cut out sugar or gluten. It's a lot more complex and holistic in that way, certainly to achieve the results that you're looking for and to have them last. And as much as we'd love to say just perpetually go on holiday and you don't want to have to think about it, that's not feasible. But at least this way, you now know some of the big mistakes not to make, hey?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, if you are needing support, then please reach out to either of us. I think that there's never a wrong time to start healing. I'm mindful that this episode is coming out as we inch closer and closer towards Christmas time. And I often get questions from people who are inquiring around starting to work together, whether or not I think they should delay until the new year because it's Christmas. And my answer is almost always the same in that, you know, in order for us to have optimal health, we have to learn to heal in the context of real life and course correct in the context of real life. Mm. And the sooner you do something about what you're feeling, the easier it is to get back to where you need to get to. And this idea that we have to wait for this perfect runway in order to dive into a health journey or a health focus is just like it just will never happen. And if you teach yourself to see it that way, I find that you're often the person who will constantly need to be doing another challenge, another detox, another cleanse. Whereas if you look at it as a continuum and see it or reframe it as there's always a way to move forwards towards healing, it just is adjusted based on the season of life I'm in, you'll find that you have far less things to quote unquote fix along the way.
Mm, my God, that's such a good message, especially at this time of year.
Yes. Yes. Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We look forward to chatting again next week. And in the meantime, as always, any questions, just reach out. And I can't remember what episode is coming up next, but I'm sure it's fabulous. So tune in next week and we'll chat to you soon.
Speak to you then. Bye. You've been listening to the Holistic Health Podcast with Amy and Nat.
If you loved this episode, then make sure you share it on Instagram and give us a tag.
If you'd like to help us spread the holistic health message far and wide, then we would also so appreciate it if you left a rating and review. This helps us more than you know.
And don't forget to come and say hi over on Instagram. See you next week.